ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Mother's Day edition of Warrior Connection. And the respect is what all the mothers would definitely get from all of us at Warrior Connection and the Progressive Radio Network. Well, today is Mother's Day. It's a very chilly but sunny day here in Illinois. And I've got a very, very special guest for us tonight. I mean, a mother and the whole shebang. I don't know how to put this together. This woman is totally incredible. I'm sitting here looking at a picture of her, and she was for the U.S. Air Force, Miss Air Force Recruiter in 1968. And she's gone on to become a prolific writer. She was born at Chanute Air Force Base. Her father was the director of the 505th U.S. Air Force Band in the Midwest. I mean, incredible, incredible. Phyllis, welcome to Warrior Connection.
Hello, Doug. Thank you for having me.
Well, how are you today on Mother's Day?
Oh, just chilling out here.
Yes, Doug, and Denise is here.
Hey, Denise.
Hey.
Welcome. Happy Mother's Day, Denise.
Well, thank you. And I was waiting for a lead-in, and welcome to our guest for today. And wanted to know if I could give a quick update before you get going with the interview.
Well, absolutely. Hey, Phyllis, this is my co-host, Major Denise Nichols, a retired Air Force flight nurse and professor of nursing. And she lives out in Denver, Colorado, and she is a mother to a whole bunch of military veterans all over the place. And then she's also the mother of her own daughters in law school right now.
Oh, well, happy Mother's Day.
Yeah, we've made it through year one of law school, so I'm very proud of my daughter. And, yeah, I feel like I'm a mother hen to all my fellow Gulf War vets, having been a nurse over there. What else is a nurse supposed to do? But without further delay, I'd like to give two quick updates. Number one, we have a new bill that was introduced by Senator Sanders on April 25th.
Mm-hmm.
And this is very, very important for everybody. You get on the phones, pick up those phones, call your United States Senator in D.C. and ask for the veteran staffer. And the bill number is Senate Bill 851.
Mm-hmm.
And the bill is, we've had caregiver benefits for the post 9/11 veterans. Well, this bill will open it up to pre-9/11, and we definitely need that for the Gulf War vets, and I'm sure a few Vietnam vets that need the help with their caregiver assistance. So they, you know, initially opened it up for the post-9/11, but this bill would open it up pre-9/11, open that door up to help the caregivers. You know, they get a salary for helping with their husbands, spouses, mm-hmm. And also, you know, training and, you know, just, you know, kind of a helping hand to keep them going. So I think it's very important that we all get on the phone, call our U.S. senators, and ask them to co-sponsor the bill with Senator Sanders. The bill number is 851. So that's very, very important. That's our newest effort. Just found out about in the past week. We have, I think, a lot of the VSOs supporting it. But people, it takes phone calls, takes emails to get our senators to sign on and support this. Right now, he's introduced it. There's no co-sponsors yet.
Mm-hmm.
And even though he's the chair of the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee, we do need to gather up co-sponsors for him.
I think one thing's totally extraordinary. In
mm-hmm.
last issue of the Reserve Officers Association magazine, The Officer, they recognize our good friend Bernie Sanders for all the work he has done with veterans. And for the ROA to recognize Bernie Sanders as a veterans advocate is an incredible leap.
Mm-hmm. It definitely is. Then, Doug, the other announcement I have is, as everyone knows, I have been tracking the obits of our Gulf War vets that came home since we came home from the war. And in April, I tracked, and the ones I know of from tracking obits, we have a total, I'm clicking here so I can get my total, the total number that had died. And what concerns me about this is that we have too many in their 40s dying, just
mm-hmm.
too many. It's not, I just don't think it's normal for a below 50 age group to be showing up with so much death.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we try to pay attention and give honor to them and remembering them, but also to get the word out of what's going on here. Mm-hmm. And whether the VA is truly tracking everybody. If they're not in the VA, if they don't have a claim, that doesn't go on a death certificate. So I've always worried that the adequate, correct count is not being done. And so one of the things I do is track the number of deaths each month, and I also track and see if there's abnormal early deaths occurring, like the below 50 and what they may be dying of. And sometimes you can't get a whole lot of data from an OBIT, but it gives us some idea of a trend. Now, we had 39 in April.
39 in April alone.
And in the age group of 40 to 45, 11 of those 39.
Oh, my God.
And 45 to 50 was 8. 50 to 55 was 5. 55 to 60 was 5, 60 to 65 was 4, and our over 70, which is our Vietnam and got 4 vets, is 6. So, it just seems to me that it's just too many in that early age group. And that concerns me deeply. And I'm coming back up to the May figures. It is Mother's Day, and so a mother would want to remember their offspring that have died. So I wanted to name a few names. As far as this month, I think we have 7 now. And I'll just read the name and the age real quickly to give them honor. There was a Gerard Bangerter, age 47. He died of cancer. We have Jeffrey Turner, 46. And I don't think that one gives us the cause of death at all. But he was surrounded by his loving family at the hospital. Then we have Staff Sergeant Pedro Garcia, 62, out of New Mexico, and he was Vietnam in Persian Gulf, and it does not give a cause of death. Number 4 on our monthly tally here was Master Sergeant Houston III, 52 years old. Died at the VA Medical Center. It does not tell us his cause of death. We have, I want to be sure I'm not repeating a name here. I think I am. We have another one, which is Jeffrey Turner. And, again, died surrounded by his family. Again, I know the cause of death. And the last one I have listed is Robert Perskinski, 63, and died at his home. He served in the U.S. Army and was in Saudi Arabia during Desert Storm, and also served, I guess, in Afghanistan. And he served in the Army 33 years. So we have them all age groups, but like I said, I'm very concerned about the younger than, say, 55.
Yeah.
I think that serves as a warning sign, and we want to honor their families, their spouses that have to continue on without them.
Absolutely.
Their mothers, the spouse that may be the mother of their children.
Mm-hmm.
And remember that this is going on every day for all of our veterans, and particularly, I'm centered on our Gulf War vets since I was over there doing my duty. And as a nurse, I don't think our duty ever ends, just like Doug's duty never ends. But it's good to remember these people every month that this is happening day in and day out.
Yes, it is.
And therefore, with this happening, with the earlier than 50 age group with cancers, yeah, I do believe we need to expand that caregiver bill and be able to help more veterans' families in any way possible.
Well, I think that you're doing something absolutely wonderful, and I will definitely get in touch with them.
And so I hope everybody that's listening this next week, take the time to call your U.S. Senator in D.C., ask for the veterans person, and talk to them. You can pull up the bill, but basically it's extending the caregiver bill from just covering the post-9/11 veterans to pre-9/11. And we need to get every senator. I cannot see getting a good number of co-sponsors. And you can get your the phone numbers. Go to www.senate.gov, and right on the top of that page, it will say senators. Click on that little icon, and it'll list them by state or just alphabetically, and it gives their office phone number. Also gives you the email, so you can do both. It doesn't take long to contact two people that represent your state in D.C. So
absolutely.
Please, everybody, get on board, and let's show Senator Sanders that he's got support out here from the veterans when he introduces a bill to help us.
Thank you, Doug.
You got it.
Yeah, I think that's really neat. I mean, having both of you on right now. I mean, Phyllis, you grew up in the military. You were around. You now have a grandson that's in the Army, National Guard.
He's in the National Guard, yes, in Louisiana.
Yeah, in there. And Denise, I mean, you've been involved. You've been deployed too many times over too many years on Mother's Day. I mean, going all the way back to the Vietnam War when you were stationed down at Wilford Hall providing care for the Vietnam vets, and then all the way through Desert Storm to continue. How does Mother's Day, the special feeling, how does that fall in when you have a son or a daughter that's deployed, or you're taking care of individuals that are ill in the hospital, or you're a daughter and your father's been deployed and your mother's been deployed?
I don't really hope that I ever have to find that out, but he isn't. He's just recently just graduated and joined, so I haven't had that to worry about just yet.
Well, Doug, when we deployed to the Gulf War, my daughter was 4, my one and only child, and it was heart-wrenching saying goodbye to her, and then I ended up having to say goodbye twice because I said goodbye in Denver when I got on the plane commercially to fly to San Antonio and join up with my group getting ready to go overseas. And I can remember the husband and the daughter being at the airport and my daughter crying so loud that even when I went on the airplane, I could hear her.
Mm-hmm.
And it just broke my heart.
I can't even imagine that. I just my father retired and he had been in the Navy and then he went into the Army Air Force, and when it branched out he went into the Air Force. I've lived all over the world, well, all over not the world, but like in Japan and the United States, different places. I've always lived in an Air Force base until he retired. So it's been my life, you know.
Yeah.
But the reason that I didn't marry or go into the Air Force was because I found it a very lonely life of not having any of your relatives and no holidays with anybody. And you'd make friends for 3 years, and we would say, well, we have to go to, when you're moving back to the States, and they would get so distraught because we'd have to leave, and no bonds and no, you know, no connection could be made as a lifelong friendship. And all my family was here in Illinois. And so I just felt really left out. I said, I'm never going to travel, even though I enjoyed it and I loved the heck out of it. I didn't want that for my children, you know, because it's just, no, you can't make any bonds. I can't say if that's strong enough. But we're okay now.
Yeah, it's, you know, for the veterans and for the military, it is a transition for them. When they leave active duty, we were all young when we joined.
Yep.
There's that bond. And, you know, I know Doug's ran into people since then that he knew way back in Vietnam days. That bond never goes away, but it is very difficult to transition and not have that same bond in civilian life. I do know that with the computers and everything and Facebook now, we're kind of able to communicate better with each other.
Oh, much better, much better. There was a time when you would meet somebody, and like in Japan, and I would say, well, I'll write to you, and they'll say, I'll write to you. But then when you're only about 10 years old and you ask your parents for to call long distance, or you ask your parents to give you a stamp, it's like, oh, you don't need to call them. And by the time you do, they've moved on. You're like, oh, I don't think I know. I remember you, but not really, you know.
Yeah.
So it was really, really difficult, very difficult for me. And I am back in Rantoul now after living in New Orleans for 45 years. And these are my roots. And I remember when after Katrina took our house and stuff, my daughter had already moved here. And she had lived here for, married to an Air Force man. And he went into the reserves later. And now she moved back with my three grandkids 2 years ago. And I'm still here. And what's really strange about still being here is that when I drive around the Air Force Base, I go see my old houses. And when we first moved here, actually, the apartment that my daughter had gotten for us before we got here on the way from Katrina was the one that I lived in when I was little when I first started writing.
What a consequence.
Yeah, and it was so strange because my first books ever were delivered at that door, and I had started writing at 7 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's really, I enjoy being back home, but I miss my daughter, my only child, and my three grandkids. And that's very difficult because I am their nanny, and I am a caregiver of many, many, many nannies of children all my life. But they're all in Louisiana, and here I've become a nanny to two little boys. My really close friend, Violet and Troy, they're wonderful, wonderful people. They have two beautiful children. And my daughter was best friends with their older son, who they miss each other dearly. But I really needed them really bad at the time when my daughter and them left. For 7 months, they had me as a regular person there because I refused to leave. Because I miss my kids so much, and now my grandson's going to be 20. He just came in third place for the state high jump for LSU for Louisiana. Actually, a high school, but it was held at LSU College in Baton Rouge. He was a track star here, and he made state for Illinois for three-time qualifier. My grandson, Kyle, he also came in the district winner in long jump in pole vault, and I missed it all. Yeah, it's so sad. I missed it all. He just had his prom the other night, and I just posted pictures on Facebook that they sent me, and I was able to, 1,000 miles away, buy the tux and have them pick it up and buy the flowers for them. So I can do things like 1,000 miles away. Still, I'm still nanny. They're not getting rid of that.
Yeah, mothers and nannies.
I'm telling you, there isn't anything better. And today I got the most wonderful Happy Mother's Day comment from my daughter. And she even put as her profile picture a picture of her and me cheek to cheek when she was about 15 or 16. So it really meant a whole lot to me that, you know, I was out there. And she remembered me, and I mean, I knew she would, but still, you know, still good to hear.
Denise, you two are the same age, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Are we? Oh, when is your birthday?
January 1. I'm in my 60s now.
I just made 63 April 24th.
So it's kind of interesting to, you know, still be out there and trying to help vets at this age, but I feel that it's a calling.
Wonderful. That's wonderful, wonderful, wonderful that you're doing that, because somebody has to.
Well, one of the things that came up today, being on Facebook is wonderful, but one of our vets that I'd helped to get up to testify in November of 93, I raised money and pledges to get the first Gulf War vets to go testify. Mm. And Tim was traveling to the war-related illness, had a three-hour layover in Chicago, and was sick.
Oh, no.
And he went to the USO, and the USO only accepts those retirees or active duty.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of opened the door to me again. I've thought about this a number of times, but they wouldn't let him go in, so I called the USO in O'Hara and ended up calling the supervisor on her cell phone and got approval for him. He ended up sick and in a bathroom instead of having a nice place to be at the USO and out in the terminal area. And so he didn't, you know, follow up. But he also told me there was an amputee veteran that had served Afghanistan that was turned away, too, from the USO. So I had worked it out. If they got back to the USO, they could get in the door. But, you know, I feel like I'm a little mother hen. I saw his notice that he was doing a layover for 3 hours and was sick. Knew he was going to the war-related illness center, and having known him all these years, you know, it was like the mother hen. Pick up the phone and make something happen.
You're a mom.
Right.
No matter who they are.
You know, and so it's another goal that we have, I think, to put down to write the head of the USO.
That's right.
With these veterans that have served, that are amputees or Sitka Corps vets trying to make it cross-country to one of the war-related illness centers, I think that we need to push the USO to alter their rules.
Yes, they need to alter a lot in this world. It's so sad that they have to go in the first place, and it's even more sad when they're so young, and it's devastating the way the world's turning out. So it's good that they have people like you standing there and helping them, and I will definitely, you know, call them and get in touch with them and do my part. You know, I have the number and everything written down.
Yeah.
As you said it.
I don't think it would take much to get people at the USO to reconsider their rules and make some changes. And especially if they're already in the VA system, or they can show they're traveling to a war-related illness center. If they're amputees from the current war, they should have a VA card, hopefully, and be able to show that veterans that are sick, that need a quiet place, should have an open door at that USO.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
So it's kind of a new thing that I'm starting today. I'm drafting a letter to USO headquarters and saying, I'm going to request that you consider this, make a change in your rules. Because we do have vets traveling to the war-related illness centers, and they're sick. They need a little special care, which means open the doors of those USOs, let them go in and have a nice recliner. To wait before they go to the next plane. And we need to take care of our people better. And
they take care of us.
Right. And I don't think it'd take that much to get the USO on board to making some changes in their rules.
Well, I'm on board here, and I'm going to do all that I can, you know. And I'll get other people to do it also. I am, even though the Air Force Base is closed here, there's still a few of us lingering around.
No, we kind of stay, you know, you came back home into your area. And
well, the thing that really gets me a little sad, though, is that because I was Air Force military here, all of my friends that I had here, they're gone that I went to school with. So I can't come in here and say, okay, I want to see my old friends, because they all transferred. You know, people transfer out. So it's like, well, that's not cool at all. You know, when I left, they left. And when I came back, they weren't here. So,
And I want to know about your book now. We've kind of diverted from the issue you came on, but, you know, I encourage vets. I've got a page set up to encourage vets to write and their spouses to write and to blog, get a blog site. There is just so much that we can still do to bring our issues and get it circulated.
Did you hear my 911 poem? Did you? You didn't go to my website. Doug had said he read it the other day on one of his emails to me. I had written one with 911 when it happened. And it's on my website. I also wrote a Hurricane Katrina one that I have here that I haven't put on the website yet. My books, actually the first book, Mardi Gras Eyes, that I started writing happened because my daughter left me with the three kids. And I'm sitting there going, okay, I was devastated. It was the worst time of my life. And I just started writing this story. And the thing is that every character in the book were my kids' names, and my friends' names, and my daughter's names. And my brother, after it got published, he said, Phyllis, he said, I can't get into the book because it's got everybody's names in it. I know everybody, and you know. And I said, okay, well, I said, I'm so sorry. I wrote it because I missed them so much that I felt like they were with me if I had them as the characters. Now, the two main characters aren't anybody that I know. I made those names up. But the bad thing that happened to my book was that the publisher went bankrupt, and they took all the sales in the United Kingdom and here of everybody in his publishing company's sales and used it to pay off one of his debts.
Oh, my.
Yeah, so I got in touch with the printing company when I realized I wasn't making any money, but I had 5 stars on Amazon.com, and I had 5 stars in the United Kingdom Amazon. So I said, this is because my book was actually ISBN's numbers on both of them. United Kingdom and America were both on that particular book. And I said, now what am I going to do? So I called and I asked them, and I also asked Harlequin Romance, what would you do if that happened to them? And they said, you have to change your book 75 to 80% in the cover and everything. Well, that's lovely. Since when am I a publisher? So I said, okay. So I put my manuscript on my computer and I said, what am I going to do with you? And I started with 42 years later. So what's happened with that book is that in that first book, there's a mysterious journal. So this new book is called, the first of the secret series, is Secrets of the Red Journal. Well, in this book, I have this girl looking for her identity and everything, and she comes across the idea and finds out about the Red Journal. So what I did is I incorporated the first book into the second book as the journal. So I didn't lose my work, all except maybe a couple chapters. And so that didn't pertain to the story. I had to remove them. But it took me 3 years. I had to change some cell phone to, you know, regular phone to pay phone to, because I was changing the timeline of the era, you know. So then what I did is I incorporated it, and as she's doing her life and going on with her life and trying to find out her identity, she comes across the Red Journal eventually, and she opens it, which is taboo to do because it does a lot of things. You're not supposed to open it. And she read it, and as she's reading the first book from day one, page one of my Mardi Gras Eyes, it goes in italicized print. So it makes it easier for the readers to follow it. So then after she goes home and she sits down and she gets the book out, then she's reading the first book of mine. And then when she decides to go back to sleep, she puts it back where it was, and then she just turns and goes into her life, okay?
Uh-huh.
And then when she gets home, it all goes over again and over again until my first book is finished. And then it goes into the second book, which starts with the ending of the first book and Secrets of Chelsea's Powers. And then the third book starts with the end of that book, which is Secrets of the Fairy Kingdom. And then the newest book, Secrets of the Star Amulet, continues. And I hope that I've answered all the secrets in that book and I've ended it. But my fans don't seem to want it to end, so I don't know what I'm going to do. That's why I didn't do a reading at the book signings I went to at the library, because how do you take 20 minutes and read four books? Because it's all the same story. And I couldn't figure out how to put all that together, so I didn't do it. But I have it all out now, and I saved my book, and it's all out there, but I had to do it all myself. I had to find a graphic designer to do the covers. I had to find out how to do the ISBN number. I had to find, because I'm too old to wait for these traditional publishers to say, oh, yeah, you know, we're going to take you. Now they want to take you, but it's, you know, already done.
Yeah.
And so I had to change everything, and I did it. And my girlfriend, Christine J. Trudeau, she's my best friend, who's also an author. She was on the radio, I think, a while back. She and I met 6 years ago at the first book signing, and her publisher messed her over the same as mine did at that time. So together we have done this. I mean, she's got, like, I think 5 books out now, and I've got the 4 plus the Mardi Gras Eyes. So we're still best friends. I want to say happy birthday to her, May the 25th, before I forget. I won't forget, but you know. So that's pretty much where my books stand right now. When I first started writing, like I said, I was 7 years old here, and I went to a second grade to Northview School. And I would always look out of the window and daydream, because I was a daydreamer. And Mr. Dixon, the principal, and Miss Hastings, I'll never forget them, they would take my little short stories and my poetry, and they would put them up on the walls. And everybody would go and read them and love them. But they would tell me, Phyllis, young lady, you have to stop looking out the window, because if you don't learn spelling and English, you're not going to become the writer that you want to be. Evidently, my stories were good, but I don't think they had much good with the spelling in it. So I would watch the trains go by, and I just found out yesterday that the train track that's been there all this time is now a bike path, which is really a good idea because it's in a safe area.
You know, Phyllis, what's really strange, guess what school I teach at?
What?
I teach at Northview.
Do you really?
Yeah, I was one of the primary substitute teachers at Northview. I was in there last week as a resource teacher, and I taught fifth grade, and yeah.
Well, the funny thing about it, too, is that my granddaughter went there when she was in second grade here, and I would go pick her up. But you know that when you go pick up your children from school, you don't always look your best. You know, because I usually sat in the car. So if my hair was in rollers, so be it. So one day I got out and I decided to walk up by the door, and this little girl ran up to me and she goes, "Oh my God, I can't believe you, who you are." I said, "Who do you think I am?" And she goes, "I think you're this lady." And she pulled Mardi Gras eyes, not Mardi Gras eyes, the Red Journal out of her backpack. And all these little fifth and sixth graders were all surrounding me. "Oh my God, I can't believe it's her. Oh my God." I'm like, "What in the world's going on here?" Evidently been passing that book around from the library. And then one little girl came up. She was so cute. She had a cocky little attitude, and she put a little hands on her hips and said, "That's not you. You don't look like her." And I said, "Well, who do you think I am?" She goes, "Give me your name." I said, "Phyllis Moore." She goes, "Oh, it is you." And before I know it, the school called me, and they wanted my books in the library, in the school there, because the kids were insisting to put my book in there. However, I don't have an AR certification yet, and they have to do testing on the books that the kids check out. Now, I just found out lately that if the librarian wanted to do it, she can legally do the test, but I guess she just didn't want to or something happened. So anyways, later on, I did a book fair when this little boy was sick that went to school there. Cody, I think his name was?
Yeah, Cody was one of my students.
Angel.
He died of cancer.
So after the book signing, the school asked me, "Well, how much money of the sale do you want?" Because I sold more books than the school did. And I said, "I did that all for you. You have every single penny." And they went, "We get the whole profits?" I said, "Yeah, that was the whole point of me being here. You know, I mean, here I started writing, and here I'm at the book fair." It was just like I came full circle. And so it was just amazing to me that the teacher told me, "Study hard, learn your English and your spelling." And to be honest with you, those are the best subjects that I have ever learned in my life. I'm great at them, but don't give me math. Do not give me math, okay? I would have been probably a nurse or a doctor by now if I had got through the math. I did go take an RN test once with my girlfriend just for the heck of it when she was taking hers, because she had been an LPN for 14 years. And I got higher scores than her in a lot of the things. Just I got eighth grade in math. And I said, "See, told you, don't give me math."
I mean, that's so interesting. I mean, you've had such a prolific life in writing and everything else. And I'm
living
sitting
in Japan was a real experience, honey. I haven't written about that yet.
I'm sitting here looking at the history book at Chinook Air Force Base of a picture of the band, of the 505th band.
No, my father was Sergeant Philip J. Strong. That's the sergeant. Well, we called him sergeant. He called him sergeant. He was the band leader with the baton. Recently, I went to the museum, and I don't know if this is him for sure, but the poster that they have from the date of the beginning of rental opening, the base and closing, they had a little bitty, chunky little band leader, and I said, "That's my dad." And I said, "I bet you anything that's my dad." I have the video of it, by the way. I have the video of, and from 1950s, of Daddy leading the band right before, behind the museum, by all the big old, it was a fly-in, you know, where all the airplanes were there. And now it's where Singular Wireless is. And so my history is here. It's absolutely here.
Well, I'm going to challenge you and Doug to do something.
Oh, yeah, I will. You don't know me, honey.
My challenge to y'all is, you know, to get a library and publicize it for veterans and for their spouses, and have a writing workshop, and starting them with blogs.
I don't know if I would know how to do that. Doug, you know how to do that?
We've already got it set up at the Rantoul Public Library.
Oh, okay. Well, I've usually gone to the book signings on that one night. I never went to the reading night or the shops because, I don't know why, I guess I always had the kids to have to take care of. But I didn't know that y'all did that. That's interesting.
Yeah, so we're working on that and get it set up. You know, I've done numerous workshops over the years with the local authors' fair where
we taught how to
do research, how to write, how to edit, how to read.
Oh, interesting.
So
I think the easiest way to get people started in writing is not to push them on a book, but maybe to start a blog on the Internet and blogging their daily experiences of disabled vets, or their spouses blogging. You know, there. I have a Facebook page for Gulf War, encouraging them on blogs, and I gave some examples and how to get signed up on the Internet for a blog. I think you can do it for like $20 a year, even. So, and you know, they put out lists every year of outstanding blogs. Mm-hmm. And some of the things that I've seen that have developed is families with children that have had rare diseases.
Mm.
And some of these blogs have become so popular that they end up on talk shows and they form foundations to raise money for those type illnesses.
Mm-hmm. I think I've seen that too. I've seen many like that.
So I kind of gave, you know, some clues and tips. I started this Facebook page to encourage the vets.
Mm-hmm.
Writing therapy is very good.
Mm-hmm.
For people as they go through changes their life early on. You know, the amputees from the current war, the traumatic brain injuries. To use the brain and blog their experiences daily or weekly, and the roadblocks are coming up upon. But
mm-hmm.
it can bring, you know, like the Civilian Chronic Fatigue Group has really blossomed with the number of blogs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if people have those problems and they go on and find people that are speaking out of what they're going through, what they find to help, what the roadblocks are, it encourages a community effort to get more recognition. And they, you know, get information and share it with each other. Doing a lot of that on Facebook now, but I don't see a whole lot of blogs from veterans or from their spouses of what they're going through.
It
and
really should
that's an easy way to get them started in writing, and they could even take it then and, you know, develop a book.
I don't know quite how. I have never lost someone in the war, thank God, and I've never, my father was injured in World War II in the Navy. But I wasn't there, so I don't know, you know, I don't know any of the details. But I really would have to research stuff, because it would probably be really easy for someone like Doug, or someone who's actually in there and saw it for face value. I was, the furthest I went was in Civil Air Patrol for 10 years, you know, with the airplanes and rescuing people. That was the furthest I've gone into the military. And you and him seem to have seen it. Bless your hearts. You've seen it so face on, and that is like what you're doing is so admirable. And I read some of the things that Doug emailed me, the picture, the wonderful picture that he showed me of himself, and that we shared pictures of each other, and that story in his blog, and it's just really wonderful. And I think that what you all are doing is just great.
You know, this is Mother's Day, and I've got to touch on this, Phyllis.
Okay.
I mean, when I'm sitting here and you and I are sharing information, I'm learning about you. I mean, your mother is the spouse of an Air Force band leader, okay? You guys are getting deployed all over the place. She's raising your kids,
mm-hmm.
all right? And your mother becomes known as Bunny of Tokyo,
yep.
and then comes back to the United States
mm-hmm.
and starts repairing automobiles.
It was Bunny.
And becomes known as Bunny.
What?
Have Bunny live at 5 to teach how people how to repair their cars. I mean,
yeah, I have her video of her commercials.
That has to be astonishing.
My mother wanted to write a book called From Gaslight to Gas Station, because her club was called Gaslight. And what's really strange is I looked at it recently, like I told you in the email, I believe, to kind of find out whatever happened to the Gaslight. It was right across from the Tokyo Tower. And I said, you know, and she did all this with acute porphyria blood disease, bleeding internally. She just went to work. We're in Fuchu, and she goes and drives all the way to Tokyo every night to work there. And it was like a dinner, gay 90s dinner playhouse. And they had Sammy Davis Jr. there. Actually, matter of fact, Shirley MacLaine, we went to her apartment, and she gave us, I was able to sit on her lap and pick out our standard poodle. And I didn't know who she was at the time. I went to her daughter's birthday party at 12 years old. I just recently found her on Facebook and let her know that, I don't know if you remember me, but you had rhinestone nylons on at 12. I didn't think that was really, that was kind of strange. But, you know, I've had Richard Simmons as a best friend for like 40, 50 years. So, 40 years. Wait, I don't want to date myself. But, it's just out there. I'm all over the place.
How did you ever get selected as Miss Air Force recruiter?
Well, the way it happened was that being military my whole life, that was my father's dream for me to make Miss Air Force recruiter, because he was an Air Force recruiter. And you had to be in the Air Force to be able to even compete. And of course you had to not look too bad. And you had to not do a talent, thank God, because I did stand-up comedy on Hitler's Highway, I told you that, but I never, ever, ever, you know, I don't have much talent other than just writing. What are you going to do, write for a contest? But you had to write a letter. As a matter of fact, you had to write why you love the Air Force and what the Air Force means to you. And I did 1 year, and I didn't make it. Another girl did. And then the next year, I went to a Civil Air Patrol meeting, and as I walked in, they stood up and saluted me because I was a lieutenant, and they just said, oh, my God, I can't believe this. And they had the big newspaper picture blown up, congratulations. And I didn't even know I made it yet. And I said, what are you talking about? And they said, you're Miss Air Force Recruiter. I said, okay, that's interesting. So what they did is they had a guerrilla parade in Gretna in Mardi Gras, and they had these open cars, you know, the convertibles, and they put the United States Air Force blue emblem on the backside, which showed to all the people, and sat me right up there with the fur coat on with Miss Air Force Recruiter on it. And the SACS drill team, which was supposed to be on Ed Sullivan that night, turned it down to be in the parade with me. And every time they would turn around, they'd wink at me. And it was a really exciting thing. And so my father was very proud that I made it and that I did it. But I had to stay very thin, and I had to watch myself, which I didn't stay thin when I got older, okay? Let me add that in. I was in an airplane crash and in a car crash, and I was in and out of a wheelchair for a lot of years, and I gained a whole lot of weight just recently. Believe it or not, I got really big, and I've lost 120 pounds since I've moved here, and I'm still continuing because I have very bad knees, and I am 63, and I'm kind of immobile, so I can't exercise as well. I'm not in a wheelchair or anything. I can walk. It's just that I get in a lot of pain for days if I push myself too much, like just happened this last week, trying to open a window that wouldn't open, and my whole back decided to go out. But so that's what happened, and I made it, and it was exciting, and, you know, I got to fill my daddy's dream.
Denise, when did you enlist in the Air Force?
Oh, my gosh. When was it? I enlisted when I was up in... I was working on my master's degree.
How old were you?
Oh, gosh. I remember.
I was 18 when I was...
back in 70, 71 or so. And I ended up being accepted into the Air Force and accepted into the AFIT program to finish up my master's before I actually went active duty.
Uh-huh. Well, that's wonderful.
So, the Air Force is one program that didn't really have a nursing scholarship-type program like the Navy did.
Oh.
The Navy had, you know, if you went to nursing school, you could, you know, enlist, and they would pay for you to go through nursing. The Air Force didn't have that. We never had a problem recruiting, I guess. But I was working on my master's, and... proceeded to, you know, talk to a recruiter and got accepted straight into the AFIT program to finish up my master's.
Well, I do love the Air Force life. I mean, I'm not going to say I don't. I love the benefits that you have when you're an Air Force child. You don't have the stress of your parents having to pay if you live in the housing, you know. And the free medical and the free dental. With my mother's blood disease, acute porphyria, I don't know what we would have done if we would not have had the Air Force. I mean, I love, love, love the military, and I love the Air Force, and I respect everything and anything that everybody's doing for us. I was going to go into the Air Force, like I said, but I couldn't get past the loneliness. You know, it affected me as a child. I was the oldest of four, and all we had was each other, and now we're still very close, but they're all over there. They're all in Louisiana, and here I am in this little village. Hello.
You know,
all by myself. Well, my husband, you know, but still, it's like I get days when I really get upset and I want to move back. But, you know, it's three times the price it was when I'm on Social Security and Ronnie's on disability. And believe me, unless these books take off, we can't afford to move back.
Yeah.
And we really want to, in a way. My husband doesn't want to, though. He actually loves it here. I only want to move back because I really don't want to die here without my kids, without ever seeing them again. Last October, I did take a train, which was a discount because of, you know, being older, and I really enjoyed being there with them. But it was so hard to leave. my little grandbaby's only going to be 13 in August, and she doesn't want her nanny leaving her. And it's been so hard for me that there's days when I don't even want to do anything. You know what I'm saying? And now I'm starting to write another book called A Trip to Yesterday, and it's going to be out in 2014. I don't know if Doug knows. Do you know of that orphanage that was here that's now a daycare called Anna Ewing?
Absolutely.
Well, when I was a little girl, lived in Mitchell Court for a while before we left to Japan, because we used to live on Talbot Road, which is now Fairway. It's now where the Generation of Hope is. And they actually own the house now. I would stand out my yard, and these little kids would be signaling for me to come over by the fence in the backyard when they were playing, and it's right across from my house where I lived, my apartment. So I went over there, and I started becoming an active person there. And one day I heard this worker who got really upset because one of the little girls' adoptions didn't go through. I think I was like 9. And she was crying, and she said, if only I knew back then what I know now, I wouldn't have gone into this business. And I heard her say, if only I knew back then what I know now, so many times. And then I started hearing the little kids saying, well, if I knew what I knew back then, I'd ask God to give me a mommy and daddy. You know, and it's like, oh, my God, I would go home crying. And I'd go home and kiss my mom and dad and say, thank you for having me. And I would ask, tell God, please make them have a home. Well, anyway, I asked her, I said, well, what would you do if you had it to do over again, if you could just go to sleep and wake up young? And I don't know what made me say that, but I started getting people's interviews. So from the age of 9 years old, I've interviewed people. I've interviewed homeless people. I've interviewed people in Bahamas, Acapulco, Japan, Austria, on bus tours. Every place I could, I would interview, and I would ask, what would they do if they could just go to sleep and one day wake up? Now, you have the memory like a dream of your life. But here you are waking up at 18 going, wow, wait, what am I doing young? I'm 63, you know. And so all the interviews that I've done are in this new book, and some of them are even prostitutes and drug addictors. And, I mean, I interviewed anybody that I could find, and all the way up until, I guess, maybe about, I think I stopped interviewing about 4 years ago. And so I have enough to put a really big book. And it's just that saying is thrown out there so much. You hear it all the time from people. If only I knew what I knew back, you know, now, what I know back then, what I know now, in other words. I would change this or I would change that. You'd be surprised of the answers of some of the things that people say. You know, that they would, some people wouldn't even change. They didn't want to go through it all again. But, you know, because you couldn't have the same love unless you, by chance, fate brought you back together again. So if you're happily married, that kind of throws that out, you know. It's not like you're going to remember your past. You're going to remember like it's a dream. You know, you wake up and here you are young again in your mom and dad's house. Would you want to do that again? Some people said, heck no.
Phyllis, how do you have a website, or how do people get copies of your books?
It's at phyllismorrisworld.com. And I have my own author's page at Amazon. You just have to click on Amazon author's page underneath the thing. On each book, there's a first full chapter excerpt that you can read, each full chapter excerpt of each of the books. All you have to do is click on it, and it'll bring it up. And there's a picture of me and Richard Simmons. And then on the next page, there's the picture of, a thing that I wrote. Like in Japan, when I would lay down in the grass, I knew that I was looking at the stars, and I've always been looking at stars and skies. That's why my books are mystical fantasy books. And I used it for therapy when I had my post-traumatic stress from Katrina, because when Katrina took our house and we had all the people were doing our house, they were ADA accessing it at the time that we got mandatory evacuation. And the big tree in the back destroyed the house. Now, we put our birds up high. We had lots of cockatiels, and we put a lot of food and water in there. Now, I can't tell y'all how many times we have left a hurricane and nothing happened. You know, we've evacuated for no reason. So we had no more reason to believe that this is going to be worse, but we prepared. Now, we had a squirrel that was already put out in the tree that we raised as a baby in our house. And I got a call from my neighbor that said, Phyllis, Rebecca has gone in the house and got all of this bird seed, which we left in the house, you know, and because I had fed her before I left. I forgot to put it up in the cabinet, and she was feeding. They had mallets and squirrels and birds and any wild thing that liked seeds in front of my yard. She said that there was like 200 of them at one time, she thought. And it was like, because the open house had a, you know, it was open. They could go in. The tree had eaten the roof. And my husband went back, and he had to go in with the mildewed house, and the birds were alive. And so the tree branches came in one by one cage, and the other tree branch was in the other room, right by the other cage, just missing the cages. And so we brought them back. My husband went to leave out the house. It was after 6 o'clock at night, and he got stopped because it was curfew time, and he couldn't leave. He had to sleep in the mildewed house. In the water. He had to sleep in there and wait for the next morning before he could actually leave, even though everything was packed up in the van that he was going to bring here. And it was a very sad time. I had post-traumatic stress disorder. I lost friends. I lost family. My sister's father-in-law, I believe, was in his house in a wheelchair, and he became sick later or something. I don't know all the details. But these things are just, it was so devastating. I wrote a poem. Would you like to hear it about Hurricane Katrina?
Please.
Okay. Hold on. Let me get a light in here because it's getting kind of dark outside already. It says, Hurricane Katrina. Katrina, you blew into town, turning our city and lives upside down. People cry. They scream out, asking what it's all about. Why? Bodies float under the sky when they once where they once stood. Hearts and spirits broken, children missing, families lost. How did this happen? At what cost? Nothing to eat or drink, a lifetime gone in a blink, all around destruction and death. Questions echoed in the air. Is there someone out there who will care? Who will care? Water everywhere, a city gone. We are strong, we stand tall. God bless us all.
Well, you know, there is, Denise and I, we've done shows on this before. Both of us have been writing, you've been writing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can't emphasize enough, and you've just demonstrated again how important it is to write and get the information out.
Yep.
When you're dealing with PTSD. And
I had post-traumatic stress disorder really bad. I had to be hospitalized when I got here.
Yeah. I mean, today is Mother's Day, and Denise, Denise, you've been a nurse forever and ever, and all of our friends, and I've read this to you before, but again, it starts off because it is Mother's Day. And this is for Sue Cartwright and Linda, who wrote Home Before Morning, an incredible story about Vietnam veterans.
Mm-hmm.
And Kitsy and Marlene and a whole bunch of them. Ode to the nurse, mother, wife, daughter, and sister, the dove who sails above the clouds, soaring on golden wings with a heart of gold, busted bodies causing interrupted dreams, pain and suffering she strives to alleviate. Using knowledge, skills, and too many prayers, the nurse, the dedicated professional, selected and wanted during war while the injured arrive, yet ignored and abandoned after war's end. Only the very few continue their efforts to care for veterans after war's end, because memories and recognition of continued problems must be ignored. The nurse, the preserver of life, may she always sail on golden wings with God-given strength to care for those in need. The nurse, the professional, who cares for eternity, in spite of adversity and pain and their own suffering, showing courage that comes from the God-given heart of gold. Here's to the nurse. May she prosper and thrive.
Aww.
May she always be there to save the next life.
Oh, my best friend in Louisiana, one of my best friends was a nurse, and she was such a sweet person and soul. And I'm in awe over, that's why I wanted to be a nurse. I just took a different path, you know, but I honor and respect everyone that's out there that helps the ill of any kind, you know, any illness. It's really a gift from God that they have that ability to do so. That's the way I feel about that, you know. And whenever, like, Hurricane Isaac hit there in Louisiana not long ago, where my kids are, and I'm here, and I couldn't. Recently, tornadoes hit out there, and I'm here, and I'm 1,000 miles from them. I can't help them. Not that I could really help them, but Nanny thinks she can solve everything and she can help everything. I can just do so much now, you know. But every time it happens, I go back into that post-traumatic stress part. Like when Sandy hit New York, oh my goodness, I was just not myself. I just, you know, had to stay isolated in my room because it was just so sad. I couldn't even watch it. And then when the when the earthquake hit Tokyo, I was there. I went there where I saw parts of places I've been going down the street, like where I lived, and it's like, oh my goodness gracious, you know? And I had earthquakes there every night. Japan had earthquakes every night.
Yeah, I actually worked in Sendai Hospital with the Army and the Japanese Self-Defense Forces
years ago,
and that's all obliterated from
Well, you know that Mount Fujiyama was still an erupting volcano?
Mm-hmm.
There's a hotel up there that we stayed in, and that wasn't too much fun either. But
well, we're running out. This has been a very special program. Phyllis, thank you very much. Denise, thank you. Phyllis, can you come back on Warrior Connection again?
Anytime. Just let me know. You got my email address.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, again, very special. Thank you to Phyllis Morris. Thanks to Denise Nichols and everybody else. And God bless America and happy Mother's Day. Ladies and gentlemen, have a good evening.
Thank you so much. Same to you. Hi, Denise.